And good evening, everyone. It's Stephen Trammell here for the week of November 8th. I'm joined by
Todd Reynolds. Good to be with you.
Todd, thanks for being with us. We missed last week's podcast.
Yeah. We're trying to get back in the saddle after a week off.
Yeah, we were out of town and got to spend some time with the family, which was good. But I mean, it's the first one we haven't done, I think.
Feels like in a while. I don't know exactly when. I mean, there was one week when I sent out a Sewell Hall sermon when you were out west running around getting a camper.
But nobody told me, hey, where's the podcast? So it might just be you and I
that are
doing this. But I hope not. I mean, we got important things to talk about and hope that we're offering some encouragement. I hope it's better than the election stuff.
Oh, mercy. Mercy. You set a low bar there. But wow, thankfully that I think is close to being behind us. Some people may be unhappy with the result, but I'm just looking forward to not seeing political ads every 5 seconds.
Well, two things that are going to disappoint you. One, it's not over. And two, there's going to be a runoff in Georgia specifically.
I was thinking, so as I said it, I was like, I did see a John Ossoff commercial last night, and that runoff is going to be super fun.
You're not out of the woods, but that's why we're doing stuff like this, because we got better things to talk about.
Yeah, better things of a spiritual nature, things with eternal principles and ramifications.
And you've got a good topic lined up for us this week, and really not this week. Like, we're going to kick off a series here that I think will be super helpful.
Yeah, I'm excited about us digging into these principles, but doing some reading and listening to some other podcasts and just thinking about life in Christ. And I want us to spend a couple of podcasts or a few podcasts, we'll decide how many, on the principle of living a life worthy of Christ's sacrifice. And just thinking about his sacrifice, what it should mean to us, and what I think it does mean to us, and then just emphasizing being focused on living a worthy life because of it every day.
Yeah, I mean, there's some verses that speak directly to that.
Right.
Maybe not exactly in those words, but the idea of walking worthy, we got some pretty clear Bible verses to kind of kick us off.
Yeah, I wanted to read Ephesians 4, verse 1, just right out of the gate. Paul says there, "Therefore I, the prisoner of the Lord, implore you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you have been called." So, pretty clear. I mean, just walk in a worthy manner. And the idea of being worthy, I want us to talk about that a little bit here at the beginning. When you think about someone that is a worthy soldier or a worthy opponent on the basketball court or the football field, like, what do you think of?
Somebody worthy?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, somebody that you look at, it's like, man, they're doing the best they can. I mean, they're an adversary that they're not just a nobody.
Yeah, like a force to be reckoned with, you know, someone where there is a challenge, there is, you know, this contest, you know, in the arena of sports or, you know, you might think about it in a military situation where you have a worthy opponent. It's someone that's trained, it's someone that's ready, it's someone that has some talent, it's someone that has some ability. And it's not talking about like perfection. We don't, right out of the gate, I don't want us to in any way leave that impression. We as human beings are sinners before God, and we're unworthy, right? So what Luke chapter 17, verse 20, it's verse 10, says that our mindset before God should be we are unprofitable or unworthy servants. We've only done that which is our duty to do. Jesus says that's your attitude even when you do everything that's been commanded. Like you're unworthy. So I get that, and that certainly is an important point for us to emphasize. But there's also verses like Ephesians 4:1. It's like, we need to do everything that we can to be worthy. And, you know, I think about Hebrews chapter 11 toward the end when the Hebrew writer is talking about all those heroes of faith. There's certain men, he says, they were men of whom the world was not worthy. Right? They're worthy servants of God. The world is not even worthy for them to walk on its, you know, green grass.
There's a couple things that stick out to me as you talk about the idea of being worthy. You know, he implies that there's a way we could be unworthy.
Right.
Or walk in an unworthy way. And as it relates to that, the idea of walking, like there is an expectation for Christians. And I know sometimes people just, you know, feel like baptism or their conversion is kind of like the culmination of their spiritual life. And as soon as somebody's baptized, we're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But really the work is just beginning. And it's a serious work. It's a work that has a standard that God has set. And like you said, it's a pretty high standard. Like if we're going to be worthy, well, let's talk about what that means. You said a worthy opponent.
Right.
You know, if I'm playing basketball and I play against you, you know, you're a worthy opponent. But when we're talking about worthy compared to the calling that we've been called, now all of a sudden the worth goes way higher, right? Because my personal worth compared to everybody else, I feel like I'm walking pretty worthy of that. But the bar is even higher.
Yeah, that's right.
Because the bar is God's calling. Like,
right.
The calling which I've been called, like to be like his son.
Right, right. For you have been called for this purpose, just as Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example so that you should walk in his steps.
So, be holy because I'm holy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So 1 Peter chapter 2, 21, you mentioned in 1 Peter chapter 1, both of those texts let us know this calling is a high bar for sure. And to be worthy of it is not going to be something we just, you know, slip on a banana peel and it happens. It's going to need to be deliberate. It's going to need to be intentional. And kind of want us to just dive into to that principle. Another verse I wanted to bring up is 1 Corinthians 6, verse 20, where Paul says, "You have been bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body." You know, it's like, bought with a price. You think about the price, it was paid in blood.
Yeah.
And it's not just anyone's blood. But I mean, if there was a person who gave their blood for us to like to save our life, you know, that would be a pretty powerful thing. You know, Jesus is pointing in that direction when he says, "Greater love hath no man than he lay down his life for his friends." But then when it's Jesus's blood, the Son of God, the creator of all things, it's not a light, cheap price.
Yeah, and so I think that, I mean, what we're really talking about is driving motivation to our service to God.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And getting more motivated about the reason and rationale behind it. Because, you know, it's very easy to talk about, here's what you need to do.
Right.
And he's going to explain some character traits later in Ephesians 4 about what that looks like. But the concept of you just wanting to walk worthy, that's what we're talking about. We want you to get motivated to feel amped up, like, I want to take this serious and make sure my commitment reflects the majesty of the one who put all this together for me.
Yeah, exactly. When you think about motivation, like, sometimes you get all motivated and you get all gung-ho and you crush it on whatever you're motivated for, like, a couple of days. And then the motivation can wane.
Couple of days. You're crazy. You think about Jesus going to Gethsemane and saying, "Hey, can y'all go wait over here for an hour and pray with me?"
Yeah.
And then he comes back and they're asleep. And he said, "The flesh is weak.
Yeah.
Your spirit's willing.
Yeah.
But man, your flesh is weak." And that's what we're talking about. Like when we were talking about walking, we're talking about glorify God in our body. We're talking about the physical things that I've got to do in my life. And you're 2 days?
Well, here's the thing. The reason I say that is because if we're going to stay motivated, we need something that's really compelling to last more than 30 minutes, to last more than a couple of days. And for me, just like maybe this principle and these verses, you know, from 1 Corinthians and Ephesians, we'll look at one in Hebrews in a minute, will just help us to get this in our mind. Because you're absolutely right. I mean, the intent with this content is to say, let's get motivated, but let's stay motivated. Like when you don't feel like doing what you need to do, or you're tired, you know, when the flesh is particularly feeling weak, you know, can we muster up some conviction or some motivation or, you know, some courage or just some energy to do what needs to be done?
And we can. I mean, we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. We've got lots of Bible examples, both men and women, of people who, like you said, the world isn't worthy. we have the ability to be someone that God looks at and says, hey, you didn't fall asleep when I needed you.
Right.
You were standing there beside me, honoring me with your life and your commitment. And we want to be those kind of people. Like
yeah.
Jesus said, we want to be the servant that he finds so doing when he comes. We don't want to be the people
that's
that are
right.
just lazy, like, hey, he's never coming back. Like, we want to be diligent about that work. And so all those things that we'll talk about will kind of speak to being worthy of this great calling that we've been called.
Yeah, and we need to be motivated because there's so many things usually for, you know, an adult man or woman to be busy doing, right? I mean, like for me, I've got to stay motivated with raising my children. I've got to stay motivated in my job. I've got to stay motivated to help the church. I've got to stay motivated, you know, in any opportunity to serve Christ or serve my fellow man or serve my brothers or sisters in the church whenever it may become available. So the reality of it just needing to be anytime, all the time, you know, it's just an important thing to be motivated.
And let me be a broken record here for a minute. I feel like I say this all the time, but I don't think we have raised the bar as a society for expectations of Christianity in the last 100 years.
Well,
you know, so when you talk about the bar that's set right now, there's not too much, right, that people feel like God has asked of them, right? You go to services every once in a while,
right.
Or, you know, you might give a little bit of money. But I mean, outside of that, like we'll take 5 minutes and do communion and then you're just kind of back to devoting every day to, you know, this great company and trying to, you know, further their ends or all this stuff. And so we really aren't in the mode of sacrificing too much for the kingdom of God.
Yeah, and I would even say that would be like a secondary goal of this series and the podcast. I mean, number one, want to be motivated. Number two, we want to raise the bar. Let's raise it at least a little bit. Let's not sleep with our forefathers in the grave in 20, 40, 50, 60 years, whatever it's going to be. And the bar hasn't been raised at all. We've just kind of maintained the status quo.
And that's what that's what people do in religion. They maintain. We're going to get up and do the same thing that I've been doing. And invariably what happens is you just get less and less and less.
Yeah.
And oh, what a weariness it is.
Yeah, right, right.
And you just disdainfully sniff at it, like you said, Malachi. So
yeah.
I think we should appreciate the work that's before us because it is not a one-person job.
Right.
It's not a two-person job. It's not a podcast job. It is an entire church of people deciding we're going to take seriously the calling that we've been called to because there's no greater person than Jesus Christ.
That's right.
I'm going to wear his name and he's going to put his name on my forehead. Then that's going to mean something in my life and I'm going to wear that badge with honor and pride.
Yeah. And if he's going to sprinkle even one drop of his blood on your person, you know, on your spirit, which is what Peter says at the beginning of his epistle, that we're sprinkled with the blood of Christ. Like, you're not receiving that blood as a light thing.
Yeah.
That's heavy duty. Let's read one more verse. Hebrews chapter 10. Let me go back to verse 28 and read verse 28 and 29. The text says, anyone who has set aside the law of Moses dies without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. How much severer punishment do you think he will deserve who has trampled underfoot the Son of God and has regarded as unclean the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified and has insulted the Spirit of grace? You know, that's a hard verse, you know, and obviously it's pointing to negative consequences, you know, being a recipient of God's judgment, but like it speaks to what we're talking about this is not a light thing. The blood of Christ is not a light thing. The sacrifice of Christ is not a light thing. And you want to talk about punishment in the Old Testament? It was pretty hard and it was swift and people were stoned. And then he says, wait a second, it's going to be a lot worse when you take the blood of Jesus and the sacrifice of Jesus and you basically walk on it.
Yeah, and here's how you walk on it. He says, just a few verses earlier, if you go on sinning willfully after receiving a knowledge of the truth. So there's an expectation that you're going to take this serious and it's going to translate over to your life.
Yeah.
And the direct context is not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together. So something that we would think of as very small.
Right.
And yet here, Jesus, where two or three are gathered in their midst and you're just driving on by like, I got something else to do. And there Jesus is waiting to commune with you, right, to be with you. And you're like, nah, there's something more important to me than this.
Yeah, right, right. And then, you know, you're just going to be the rightful recipient of God's judgment.
Yeah. And so don't think, oh, somebody else can trample underfoot the Son of God. This is how you can do it, just by some very, what you would consider just mild things. Like, what's the deal? Well, here's the deal. Christ's blood isn't just a common thing, and you're walking all over it again.
Right, right. So definitely some very powerful language, I think, from the Hebrew writer here. You know, it's like you're insulting the Spirit of grace. I mean, the last thing we want to do is to live a life such that when we stand before God in judgment, He says to us, I gave my Son for this service. And it's some kind of half-hearted, mediocre, you know, not in any way wholehearted effort.
Just like in Malachi, look, I'm a great king.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, exactly.
Offer this to your governor, see if he'd accept it.
Right.
And, you know, just to go with your Hebrews 10, I mean, Hebrews 6 mentions the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he phrased it almost in a worse way. He says, if you've tasted the goodness of the word of God and have fallen away, you're crucifying once again the Son of God and holding him to contempt. I mean, so it's like when you treat Jesus' sacrifice in an unworthy way, it's like you're crucifying him again.
Exactly. And can you just even imagine? I mean, that's why I think this is kind of powerful stuff, because I mean, we can't even imagine like I'm going to leave here and go home and I'm going to nail Jesus' hands to the cross myself right now. Like, that's a preposterous thought. That's a really dramatic image.
But that's the language he uses.
Exactly.
I mean, it makes
that's the language he, and he's like, crucify it afresh. Like, the wounds are new. It's definitely something we want to honor his sacrifice with our daily life.
Yeah, so we're going to have several weeks to unpackage this and talk about it. Today, I think we're going to focus on really coming to appreciate the sacrifice of Jesus. And right. I think it's, you know, when you talk about it, it's like, oh yeah, we sacrifice of Jesus. I mean, we say it in prayers, you remember it in services, but you can't rise to that level in your own life if you don't really appreciate it for yourself. And if you don't feel like Christ is there as just this awesome, wonderful thing, then you're not going to live that way. You're not going to care.
Right.
And if you care about something, you're going to treat it totally different. I mean, there are things in our house here that are a total wreck and they're a disaster, but you know what? We don't care about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But there are a handful of things that have sentimental value or that Anna cares about. Look, that stuff's off limits.
It's elevated,
literally elevated away from the grappling hands of the tyrannical 2-year-olds and others, right? I mean, things that are precious, you set aside in a place of honor.
Right.
You store in a place of security because you don't want to lose them.
Right.
It's like the pearl of great price. I mean, you're just, everything else is worth nothing but this one thing. And so we want to elevate that in your minds tonight, that Jesus is that. And when he's there, then you're going to treat him in your life differently.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think to visualize that, you know, our goal is to reflect on Christ on the cross and verses that talk to us about the Son of God. But I think we go all the way back to the beginning.
Well, like the beginning.
When he came here, like when he left heaven to come down.
Well, we're a living sacrifice. Like we're not a dead sacrifice. And I'm going to suggest Christ was a living sacrice as well. That everything about his existence as a man ultimately was all sacrificial.
Yeah, that's right.
He obeyed God to the point of death, even the death on the cross, but he obeyed God in everything.
Right.
And so there were several points in his life that just are worthy of our respect and appreciation, which will then drive my motivation to say, I could probably do a better job. Here's the first one. Let's talk about Jesus's birth. Christmas is coming up. You know, people traditionally think about the birth of Jesus. And so it's a familiar story, I think, to most people that even aren't Christians. But here's what makes it so special is it represented who God wanted Jesus to be on this earth.
Right.
And Jesus said in Matthew 20, look, the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve.
Right.
And give his life a ransom for many. And that started right there when he was born.
Yep.
You know, God's picked this out from the beginning. God has planned the birth of Jesus, that he's going to come by seed of a woman, that he's going to be from the tribe of Judah, he's going to be from the house of David. I mean, all these things, down to where he's going to live, like God could have put Jesus anywhere.
Right.
And he was going to be this king that everybody was looking forward to. And then all of a sudden, at the very beginning, he's born into the most humble
right.
of circumstances.
Right.
You know, we have several women that have gone through pregnancy, and I mean, they're so meticulous about making sure everything's right,
yep.
and you're going to the doctor, and you got your delivery date planned.
Ready for my baby to come into this world.
All this stuff is there. And then you go back and read about Jesus. Jesus is put into this earth in just the most humiliating of circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so, you know, he's in a manger. I mean, he's like in an animal feeding trough.
He is born with animals.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't imagine.
Right.
I mean, we wouldn't do that. Now, people, again, grandparents and whatever have had children born at home.
Right.
You know, that kind of, but we're not even talking about at home. There's not even a room in the inn. It's like, go in here and go through this whole kind of traumatic process just surrounded by animals.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's definitely, it's not a hotel. It's not, you know, any red carpet that's been rolled out. It's animals, and it's the Son of God. And remember the language that was used is like, this shall be a sign for you that you're going to find this baby lying in a manger.
Right.
Like that goes back to what you said. I mean, that was God's plan.
And when you think about what that represents, it represents his ultimate desire to be from beginning to end. He's going to be a humble person. Right from the very beginning to the end of his life, he's cloaked in clothed in humility. And so I know we like to think about the cross, but I want you to think about the manger too, just because it represents, you know, very humble, meager circumstances. Now,
yeah.
He wasn't born in a palace. He wasn't raised in a palace. His parents, from all accounts, everything that we know about them, really nothing.
Yeah, just common people of the Jewish nation.
And they lived in a nondescript town, right? They ended up moving to Nazareth. And then you remember later on, as Jesus kind of was rising to prominence, people looked at him and said, can anything good come out of Nazareth? Like, there is nothing about this person.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are untrained men. Like,
right.
You and your people are nothing. And
right.
So from the very beginning, there was nothing about Jesus that would have suggested he's going to have a life of ease.
Yeah, and just to kind of put a bow on this first part, when Jesus says many years later as a grown man before he's going to go to the cross, he says, in my Father's house are many mansions. Well, those mansions were there before Jesus came down. That's what he left. He was in God's mansion, and he comes down to the manger. So right out of the gate, that's a part of his sacrifice.
And he didn't have to. And we don't appreciate that. Some of you that are listening were born into poverty. Okay, and you're like, well, what's the big deal? Like, we were raised in a trailer or whatever. Well, you didn't have a choice.
Right.
You know, it's not like your parents were multi-billionaires and said, you know what? We're just going to give it all away.
Live a humble life.
And I'm going to go live in, you know, nondescript poverty.
Right.
That's what I'm going to do.
Right.
So that's the difference. Like, yes, there are poor people that can get along having a kid in some very difficult circumstances. The point is that he left all those things. You want to talk about a sacrifice?
Right.
Try giving up something you've got once you've had it.
Right.
That's hard to do.
Right.
And Jesus did it at the beginning.
Yeah. And then throughout his life, I mean, I don't know if we have any 12-year-old listeners, but you think about Jesus at age 12 and he's not thinking about his video games. He's not thinking even about even any kind of games. He's thinking about being about his father's business in the temple, talking to grown men about the kingdom of God.
Yeah. And as he kind of matured, right, spirituality was at his forefront, and that carried with it some real consequences. So Jesus is a human. He lived a life as a man.
Right.
And that included all the things that men experience, right? The Bible talks about Jesus being tempted in all points as we are.
Right.
What do you think that means, that he was tempted in all points as we are?
I mean, I always just think about Satan just throwing everything that he had at him.
Yeah, and when you say everything, I mean, it's not like that Jesus was immune to temptation to where he couldn't appreciate
right.
or understand or feel certain emotions or yeah. whatever. Like, he literally lived as a man.
Yeah, and you think about, like, 1 John 2, 15-17, that talks about the types of lust or temptation to sin, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, and then you think about someone being tempted in all points as we are. Well, we kind of know what it's like for us to be tempted, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes. You know, we like nice things. We have desires that are fleshly or carnal or sexual. And then we have our pride. And, you know, he was faced with that throughout his life and obviously overcame all those temptations.
Now, he could do, I mean, other than just the temptations, which is, let me say this before I move on, that's a sacrifice.
Yeah.
When you go through your life as a Christian, you're making a sacrifice, but you even get to give in to those sacrifices because you've sinned. And right. so there have been times you've been too weak to say no.
Right.
Jesus never experienced that.
Right.
The toughest, most difficult times, he overcame.
Yeah.
And he clung to God. I mean, you can go read Matthew 4 and all about the temptations. He was someone that went through the other side, and you can say, wow, he did it.
Yeah. And I think on that topic, something that is pretty important to say, hopefully quickly, is we don't even know the full strength of temptation and sin. You know, Paul tells the Corinthians that we're not going to get a temptation except that which is common to man, and God's going to make a way of escape. You know, God will require that Satan kind of go a little bit easier on us based on what we can handle is kind of how I interpret some of that. But like, there was no letting up when Satan tempted Jesus. Like, Jesus is the only one that tasted the full strength of temptation and sin to the fullest extent that it could be, you know, pressured upon him.
And did it while weak physically, right?
I mean,
he didn't just eat a big meal and then have to deal with this. I mean, he was hungry and tempted with making food.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the thing. Like, you can appreciate going through life and living a very meager life or whatever. Jesus could turn anything into anything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just why it's such an awesome point about his sacrifice in overcoming temptation. And I illustrate it like this. Like, I'll never know what it's like to pick up 1,000 pounds on a bench press. Like, I know what it's like to pick up 200. But Jesus, like, he knows the 1,000 pounds. Like, he knows just the fullness of the onslaught of Satan, and he overcame it.
Nothing that was made without him.
Right.
And so when you talk about 1,000 pounds, he could speak the concept of weights into existence.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
he
can do anything. And here he is willingly going through the worst that humanity could throw at him, to where people could say, look, we've got a great high priest who's entered into heavens before us. We've got somebody who knows our weaknesses.
That's right.
Because he was hungry, and he didn't give in. He was tempted, and he overcame.
Right.
One more thing about the life of Jesus before we talk about his death. There was nothing about his life that anybody would look at and say, he's got it made.
Silver spoon.
You think about his life, especially as he was going through his ministry. Here's a person that could do miracles left and right. I mean, this should be the richest human being that's ever lived.
Right.
I mean, you want instantly healed of an incurable disease? How much are you paying that doctor over there? Look, you double it, you'll never have to go back to him again.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
He could
or cut it in half and do it for, you know, thousands of people.
He is out there giving everyone something that no one else could give them. And then at the end of the day, they just got a little money basket, and he's like, how much we got? We got enough to buy some more food for all these hungry people? Like, yeah. They're living check to check, if you will. People wanting to follow him, he's like, hey, the Son of Man's got nowhere to lay his head.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing about his life that's going to come across like, oh, he's got it made.
Right.
He is living a very simple life, and he's encouraging his disciples to do that. Like, when you go out, I'm going to send you out in these cities— don't take a money belt.
Right.
you just try to find a roof that'll take you in when you go into the town, and peace be upon you. And if they don't, dust off your feet and move on down the road.
And that's just for that night. I mean, that's not like, you know, line it up for the next 3 years.
Who wants to live that kind of life? That's a sacrifice, a willing sacrifice, so that Jesus could do that for us.
Right.
So from his birth to his life, and then ultimately, of course, his death. I mean, the culmination of that sacrifice.
Yeah, and where do you even start or, you know, just the magnitude of the Son of God? Like, people are spitting in his face.
Well, today's Veterans Day. And, I mean, we honor on days like this people that have given a sacrifice for us.
Yep.
You may not know them, but men and women who have fought and died in service for America, a very sobering thing, a thing to remember. But here you have Jesus, who really has done no wrong, is not a sinful person, is God in the flesh. I mean, there was nothing that anybody could do that could say, well, you dying on a cross is nothing. It's just like me dying on a cross. It's like Jesus being in the middle of two sinners, they represent us on those crosses.
Right.
Like, we could be strung up on a cross, but what are we going to say? One sinner's going to say to the other one, well, we deserve being up here.
We're here justly.
We deserve to be on these crosses. Right. Jesus doesn't.
Yep.
And so what makes his sacrifice so special is there literally hasn't been a person who doesn't deserve some sort of punishment.
Right.
Except for Jesus.
Right.
Which of you convicts me of sin?
Right.
Well, nobody.
Right.
Well, you had to get false witnesses. And yet they, because of their jealousy, put him on a cross.
Yep.
And nailed him there. Let's talk about that for a second. You know, you've heard 100 Lord's Supper talks, I'm sure, that go into that. But the fact that he willingly put his hand out there.
Yeah.
And let them nail it in when he could have come down from that
cleaned house
and just made them like fade from existence.
Yeah, exactly.
He could have wiped the memories of them.
Anything that you've seen like in a movie with someone being like, you know, vaporized or, you know what I mean? Like some...
He could do it.
Some lightning storm in Star Wars from the dark side. You know, I mean, he could have just... And he even said to the people coming to arrest him, "Is like, look, get legions of angels here."
Yeah, and he put his hand right there and let him do it.
Yeah,
and that's different than people going to war. You got people going to war that come home. Nobody's going to war saying, "I'm going to die."
Right.
You know, you're trying to live. You want to live. Right. You're not wanting to die. Jesus chose death.
Yeah, exactly.
And put himself on that cross. And this is not like sanitized lethal injection type stuff.
Yeah.
It's not even a gunshot to the head.
They didn't even know about a phrase or care about a phrase like cruel and unusual punishment.
It was made
for cruelty.
For cruelty. It was absolutely made to last a long time.
Yep.
It was slow and painful, humiliating.
Right.
Meant to bring shock and I couldn't imagine. Could you imagine? We don't even hang people anymore. You used to hang people here in America and leave them up on the tree to bear some kind of shame. And this is the Son of God who was stripped and beaten, mocked.
Yeah, spat upon, thorns going into his forehead that were beaten in with what would be like the equivalent of a broomstick, those reeds that would have been, you know, significant and weighty when they were with velocity, you know, hitting the crown of thorns into his head. I mean, there's just so many aspects of it. But what you said a minute ago, I'm going back in my mind to John chapter 10, where Jesus said, "No one takes my life from me." He's like, "You can't take it." Like, they thought they were taking it. Like, Pilate thought he has some authority. He's like, "I lay it down." And that's what you're saying on him putting his hand out on the block of wood, the cursed tree that he was nailed to. He just laid it down.
Well, and here's the culmination of all of it. You know, he dies. They stab him. You know, blood freely flows out. You know, he cries out, "It's finished." He returns to God. I mean, why did he do it? You know, it's not a sacrifice that is without a purpose.
That's right.
It's not a death that no one can relate to. He literally did it for you.
Yeah, exactly.
The God that made you, knows you, knew that you were going to come into existence, knew you were going to do something bad.
Knew you were going to sin against him.
Knew you really don't deserve what God promises to give you or even wants to give you, but Jesus did it anyway.
Yeah, and that's where we kind of pivot, I think, you know, as we get close to closing out this particular discussion. It's like, what does it mean to you? And Ephesians 1:7, you know, I think it's read at Lord's Supper talks and you know, pretty well-known verse, but he says, "In him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins." And it's that idea of redemption. I mean, we're hostages to Satan. We're hostages to our own selfishness, our own sin. We stand rightly condemned. And Jesus says, "No, I'm going to buy this individual back, or this group of individuals. I'm going to buy these people. I'm going to redeem them. I'm going to ransom them to free them."
Hey, you think about Jonah going out and going across Nineveh, and it's like, hey, Nineveh's going to be overthrown. You know, that feeling that you would get knowing that at the end of your life, there is a God that you're going to stand before, and there's only one sentence he's going to give you.
Yeah.
Because he's righteous, bad. And you're not righteous. And knowing you can't go back, you can't undo things, you can't apologize enough, like you've already committed the crime. He knows it, and he's going to hold you accountable. There's no escape. You're not going to be able to get out of it. And to know you're going to have to stand before there and hear that sentence. You know, the people at Nineveh are just like, "Let's proclaim it fast. Maybe he'll be merciful." God is merciful.
Yeah.
And it's demonstrated in that sacrifice.
Right.
And to me, that's the only hope I have, is that Jesus died for me.
Right. That's right.
Not just generically the whole world, which he did,
right,
but it really is for me. And you start thinking about your own sin and your own sentence and your own problem. It's special.
Yeah, it's special, and it's motivational. You know, as we talked about at the beginning, and as far as I'm concerned, and each of you that are listening is concerned, the most important thing for you as an individual is that Jesus did it for you. And make that personal, and then let's commit to living a life worthy of that sacrifice.
Yeah, knowing you were ransomed from the futile ways inherited from your forefathers, not with perishable things such as silver or gold, but the precious blood of Christ, like that of a lamb without blemish or spot. He was foreknown before the foundation of the world, but was made manifest in the last times for the sake of you.
Right.
Who through him are believers in God. But for the sake of you. Like,
that's right.
It's you. It's all about you.
That's right.
And God loves you, and God cares for you. And God went through from start to finish the most difficult life that a person could live and end in the most excruciating way. And what does he ask in return?
A life of service. It's
to walk worthy of that calling.
That's right.
And in service to him.
That's right.
And so I'm excited to go through what that's going to look like. If you take this serious and want to be worthy of that great sacrifice, then maybe we'll be able to look at our lives and make some changes.
Yeah, yeah. Raise the bar. Be hopefully consistent, diligent, focused, motivated. You know, some of those things that you know, just important to our daily walk for the zeal that we need to have day by day.
Where are we going next week?
I think we should dig into the principle of discipline and living a disciplined life, saying no to things that, you know, obviously are harmful to us, but kind of bringing every thought captive and then adding to that actions and...
Discipline's, you know, a hard one.
A person that is disciplined, though, they're ready. They're running lean. They're running mean, and they're ready to, you know, live a life of service to whoever their master is.
All right. Well, it sounds like we already got some work done on that. So we'll look forward to, Lord willing, diving into that a little bit. And then at the end of it, I mean, hopefully after we reflect on some of these topics, we'll just be good soldiers for Jesus Christ, right? We're ready and prepared, and God looks at us and says, all right, y'all are worthy to come into the kingdom prepared from the foundation of the world by my Father.
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's all we want.
And that's the goal.
Well, that's done, good and faithful exactly. servant.
That's what I was going to say, is to hear well done. That's
what you say in your goal. Prayers.
That's our goal. That's hopefully the goal for each of us who are striving to walk with Christ day by day. And man, it's going to be awesome if we live up to it and get there.
Well, he deserves it.
He deserves it, and no one's going to regret it. No one's going to hear well done and be like...
Well, it's not going to be easy.
Right.
And that's the whole point. But his life wasn't easy.
That's right.
And so if I'm going to join his army and be in his military, if I'm going to be someone that's going to walk in his footsteps, then I'm going to suffer as he suffered, and I need to be ready for that.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
Part of the worthiness that we'll talk about. And so if you're not prepared for that, or this doesn't excite you, then maybe you don't care, you know, about Jesus. Maybe you just care about this life.
Yeah.
And let me tell you that the end of this life is not fun. Go back and watch Fox News and see the chaos that left to themselves men end up in.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
Don't go watch Fox News. Go to church. We're about to go to church here in a few minutes. A
couple of minutes for our Wednesday night study. We'll get into James.
Appreciate you tonight, anybody that listened, and just grateful for God to give us another day and another opportunity to try to grow closer to him. We got work to do in the kingdom of God,
and I
appreciate your encouragement in that. Todd, thank you for your thoughts tonight.
Yep, glad to do it.
And we'll look forward to talking with you again next week.
Reynolds out.